cards? Did everybody do cards? So we have motivation, character name, setting, occupation, and murder weapon. So you all are going to have a hand in the mystery that we're going to create. We are waiting for one more panelist to come, but while we're waiting, I thought I would just introduce us. Welcome to Mystery Making with the Sisters in Crime. Sisters in Crime is a national organization of mystery and thriller writers. We span the spectrum, everything from very passionate, avid readers and fans, all the way up to New York Times best-selling authors. One thing that is unique about Sisters in Crime is our tremendous sense of community that we have within our organization. I'm the president of the New England chapter, and we have a lot of creativity that we're going to show you today. And mystery making. So what is this thing that we're going to be doing for you today? We are going to be creating a brand new mystery that we don't even know what's going to happen ourselves, because you all have been kind enough to write down one or five things: character name, motive, occupation, setting, and murder weapon. So hopefully you're creative with a few things. And what we're going to do is, based upon each clue or each element that we pull out of our bags, you'll see how that changes based upon the author's perspective and the author's genre. So, as I said, we are waiting for one more panelist to arrive. She drove all the way in from Albany, New York this morning, and she's not a Boston native, so you can only imagine the panic she's in right now.
Frankie, where are you?
You know, we all, you know. So when she does get here, ever had that horrible nightmare where the entire room goes silent and you stare at her? We're going to do that. Okay, and she won't know, but I'll fill her in that I told you to do that anyway. But anyway, let me introduce some of our panelists right now. And immediately to my left is Hallie Efren. She's going to be talking to us about the clues through the prism of suspense. Hallie is a New York Times best-selling author. I want to make sure I get all this right, because you're amazing. She's best-selling author of 11 suspense novels that reviewers have called deliciously creepy. Isn't that wonderful? Her newest, Careful What You Wish For, is about a professional organizer married to a man who can't pass a yard sale without stopping. Wow. Okay. I would say hardware stores would be my husband's weakness on that. In a starred review, Publishers Weekly called it outstanding. She's a five-time panelist for the Mary Higgins Clark Award, the Edgar and the Anthony Awards finalist, and she blogs on Jungle Red Writers. So everyone, Hallie Efren.
Thank you.
And next up we have Kate Flora. She's going to be talking to us through the true crime and police procedural. Kate's fascination with people's criminal tendencies began in the Maine Attorney General's office, dealing with deadbeat dads, abused kids, and employers' discrimination. The author of 21 books, Flora's been a finalist for the Edgar, Agatha, Anthony, Derringer Awards, and won the Public Safety Writers Association Award for nonfiction and the Maine Literary Award for crime fiction. She writes the Thea Kozak Amateur Detective Series and the Joe Burgess Police Procedural Series. Everyone?
Hey.
Yeah. Next, we have Edith Maxwell, and she's going to be talking to us through the cozy and historical perspective. Agatha and McCavity Award finalist Edith Maxwell writes the Amesbury-based historical Quaker midlife mysteries and award-winning short crime fiction. As Maddie Day, she pens the Cozy Capers book group mysteries set on Cape Cod and the Country Store mysteries. Maxwell lives north of Boston with her beau and two elderly cats, where she gardens, cooks, and wastes time on Facebook, don't we all? As both Edith and Maddie Day, and when she isn't researching new fictional murder weapons.
Thank you.
That's it. Welcome, Edith. And next up, we have Joanna Schaffhausen. She's going to be talking to us through the thrillers, psychological thrillers prism today. Joanna has a doctorate in psychology. Now, does that fit or what? Which reflects her longstanding interest in the brain, how it develops, and the many ways it can go wrong. No Mercy is her second novel, featuring police officer Ellery Hathaway and FBI agent Reed Markham. Her debut novel, The Vanishing Season, won the Mystery Writers of America St. Martin's Minotaur First Crime Novel Award. Welcome, Joanna.
Hey.
And my name is Connie Johnson Hambly. I write tension-filled thrillers with a strong moral code that features a world-class equestrian and a Boston-based cell of the IRA. So welcome me. Okay, and I know that Frankie is completely panicked right now, so we will be kind when she arrives. But what we're going to do is start, and we have the bags.
The bags?
Bags.
The bags.
Give the bags.
That phone away.
There you go. All right, so we're going to let you take setting.
All right.
And
my favorite,
we're
actually.
Do you.
A weapon.
Weapon, yes.
Occupation.
And, oh, yeah, you have to have motive. You got to have that. And right now, I have character name for that. So I'm going to let the panelists decide. Where do you want to start when you're framing your novel?
Well, I think character we need name. For this game to start with character name.
Character name, definitely.
Yep. Yep.
Don't you agree?
Yeah.
And I don't even know why.
Should I? Yeah. Well, just because. Should I grab a few of them? Because
sure, grab a handful.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a handful.
And I've done this panel with you before, so I know it's like, we need another name.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah,
we're going to do that.
I think I do that a lot. Oh, you know what I need? I need
glasses.
A prosthetic device here. But I know you're all on the edge of the chair. Will we choose your character name?
Okay. Here we go.
You might regret it if we do.
All right, here we go. We have Emily Dasher.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm, okay.
We have Ambrose McGinnis.
Emily Dasher. Do you need a better marker?
I might, but
yeah, I might have one.
No, I have markers here,
okay.
So I'm good. And the next one was
Ambrose McGinnis. Love it. Oh, don't. She's making a face, but you know.
Ambrose.
Sounds like a dog.
Well,
I have a child named Max, and all the dogs in the world are named Max. Okay. How many do we want? About six, seven?
Let's start with three.
Okay. We have Matilda Sanderson.
I like that.
Matilda Sanderson. Okay. So I'm going to just leave it there for a second. And can we weigh in on the names? Why did we want to start with names? Why did we want to start with a character?
Because for me, the first question about a book is whose story is it?
Right.
And I don't care if it's a thriller, a suspense novel, whatever it is, it's whose story is it? And it's not the victims and it's not the villains in the kinds of books we write. It's whoever cares enough to figure out the answer to whatever the question is that the book poses. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think that's a, you know, and for me, when we write a series, some of those names will already be fixed. We will have our sleuth, mm-hmm. We will have the sleuths, you know, family, friends, work group, whatever we choose to use in the book. It's particularly important, the sleuth, for me, because I write a police procedural, so that is the person who is the Atlas who is going to carry the whole story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
We did that.
Go ahead. Do you have something on names? No. So one question, though, is that how do you choose a name? Do you look at the period? Do you look, you know, at the setting that they're going to be in order to say that's a good name that fits in there?
Well, so it depends on which kind of name I'm choosing. If I'm starting a new series and I'm choosing my protagonist, or any name, any character, the name has a shape to me. And if the shape doesn't feel right, it's not the right name. I like Emily Dasher a lot.
Uh-huh.
I like that shape.
Uh-huh.
Emily, I mean, immediately Emily tells you it's someone not in my generation. I'm the Susans, the Carols, the Barbaras. Raise your hand.
The Debbies.
But Emily is this generation. And Dasher's the kind of name that mystery writers like because it's got a double meaning. It's a proper noun, and it's also that sense of quickness. Mm-hmm, and so that's also a little heavy-handed. Some of us wouldn't like that in our books, to be that heavy-handed.
Okay.
It would be heavy-handed to make Ambrose a real fan of Irish beer, too. So.
Yes.
Just saying.
Well, that's it. Now, actually, Edith just brought up an interesting point, because when we do choose names for our characters, we're also looking at the innate biases that come along with those names. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we play those biases against you as we're constructing plots and themes, et cetera. So we definitely look at naming our characters in a way that will trigger something in you that we're probably going to use against you later on in the story. So that's an important point. So we have Emily Dasher, Ambrose McGinnis, and Matilda Sanderson. Any glimmers idea right now about who might be our villain or who might be our victim? Do you get that from a name?
I want Emily for the protagonist.
Me too.
And I want Matilda.
You want Matilda. How do you see her?
I like Sanderson. I think she's really Maddie Sanderson, and I think she's an up-and-coming young cop who is trying to get along in a very male detective
named
kind
after
of world.
Who?
Just Sanderson
Maddie.
Is Maddie is well, yes, right, exactly. Right. We're going to talk Michael Connelly here.
Yeah.
So I would have put Matilda as maybe Emily's great aunt, who's her elder wise woman sidekick.
But that's
in the kind of books I write.
But that's also interesting.
And that's who
Kate's
she's named after. Right.
That's interesting because what Kate said was that this is someone who has something to prove. And if you're named Matilda and you're being a cop and you're going by the nickname Maddie, you're darn straight you have something to prove to those guys on the force. So again, isn't this just a little tiny window about our thought process when we go into creating a mystery? So, okay, authors, do you want more names? Where do you go next?
Setting. What do you think?
Who has setting?
I think she does.
Go to setting. I got setting.
All right.
How many do we want?
We'll do a couple, and then we'll see.
Have I got my glasses? Yeah. Wait a minute. Can I look ahead?
Sure.
No fair.
Hey,
I'm just going to read you the one I'm rejecting. America.
We're exercising
so
judgment.
So the reason
here.
America is not good is it's too general, obviously, okay? Ooh. I'm going to read you guys these, and you tell me what you think, okay?
Yeah.
Which ones would you pick? Okay. The Chuck E. Cheese parking lot. A tea party. The book stacks. A grotto. A state park. Animal hospital. And Richmond, Virginia, 1954.
Ooh.
Who did that? That's really good.
Yeah.
Nicely, are you a writer? Somewhat. Yes.
Never say somewhat, always say yes.
The specificity is wonderful. Okay, so what do you think? Where would you pick?
Well, for an amateur sleuth, it could be the librarian in the stacks. It could be the vet at the animal hospital. It could be the Chuck E. Cheese waitress.
Love Chuck E. Cheese.
It could be all kinds of things.
Yeah, but
what
which
about
one would you want? Come on, make a decision. What do you like?
I like the veterinarian in the animal hospital.
Yeah.
I do, too. Yeah, what do you think? What do you think, Joanna?
So from the thriller angle, I've actually used a few of those, like the animal hospital.
You have.
And the state park, both. But, like, Chuck E. Cheese parking lot would only work, like, ironically in a thriller. or if you were going for like a comedic bent. But yeah, my like for thrillers, it tends to be more urban settings. But something like a state park for a good chase scene could also
that's
be
where you
quite
go
scary.
State park. Yeah.
In the winter.
Yeah.
Or in like late November.
Yeah. Well, let's see. So I think that the Chuck E. Cheese parking lot is probably a very logical place
okay.
to have a
right.
shooting.
Yeah.
Yay!
He's going to mic you up.
Here we go. Have a seat.
We'll get her mic'd. We'll just keep talking because we just talk anyway.
Yeah, right.
So Chuck E. Cheese parking lot, cops, you know, there's just, you know, way too much stuff to pick up for evidence. Animal hospitals are great because you've got access to just a gazillion kinds of drugs, mm-hmm. instruments.
A lot of money.
You know,
you
can kill people with so many things in an animal hospital. Mm. It's just exciting. And a state park, of course, becomes a sort of environmental nightmare for doing a crime scene search. So any one of those would be just grand.
Yeah. Mm.
All right.
And this is also another window into how we think. Mm-hmm. Like if we find a place that would have a lot of great drugs and instruments to kill people, we get excited. Like, and people back away from us in restaurants when we start talking like this, believe me.
And I like Richmond, Virginia, 1954.
Yeah.
I'm envisioning the house. It's a new house, a ranch house. That's when they were building them in one of those new developments. That's where I would put my domestic suspense, is in a place like that.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It doesn't work
with Chuck
E.
Cheese, different.
No.
Okay, I'm going to pause just for a second so I can introduce Frankie. And I have to say, I primed the audience earlier to go dead quiet when you walk in.
we ruined it.
And it would be like one of those nightmares, and you have to check.
It would be like my GPS when it got me lost in Boston.
That's right. So Frankie Bailey is a professor at, in the School of Criminal Justice, University at Albany, nominated for Edgar, Agatha, Anthony Awards for nonfiction. She has won the McCavity. Her amateur sleuth series features crime historian Lizzie Stewart. So welcome, Frankie.
Yay.
Thank you.
And you're talking through the amateur sleuthism,
right.
So
I
that
can catch up fast.
When we weigh in, that's what we're going to do. So we had a few. Just to summarize, we had a few character names: Emily Dasher, Ambrose McGinnis, Matilda Sanderson. And now we're getting into settings. Animal Hospital seems to be a good one. State Park, and then someone said to check the parking lot at Chuck E. Cheese's, which is, you know, got to do it. Oh, and then Richmond, Virginia, 1954. Was that in
my
there,
friend.
Too?
64.
Oh, okay.
54.
But it doesn't.
54.
And you have to delete Chuck E. Cheese.
54.
Okay.
It doesn't
oh
go
God.
With Chuck E. Cheese.
I remember.
I was seven.
I don't think.
I am sorry about that.
History of
Richmond, Virginia. Okay.
I was only six.
Richmond. B.A. Okay. So, and then as the authors were describing what they're, now they're saying, okay, Animal Hospital, a lot of ways to kill people there. State Park, great for chase scenes, as Joanna said. And then 1954, Richmond, Virginia, why was that so, why was that?
It's just, I immediately see a suburb, I see a house, I see an unhappy family, I see something funny going on, and I want to know what's going on here. And that's the essence of suspense, is that being driven forward by something that's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And that just gave it to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like the specificity, as I said. It's something about that. I could go with that.
Okay.
I'd have to go to Richmond.
You would have to.
Yes. I would have to go.
You
there.
Would have to go to Richmond.
Right.
That's
yeah.
exactly
and
right.
study the dialect. And the customs of 1954.
And then give up because right, it's too right. much.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what is right now looming in your desires for a setting? And does that change who you see as the protagonist or victim, et cetera?
So we're in 1954. The year is 1954.
The year is 1954.
Okay.
If we went with Animal Hospital, I'd want Emily to be the protagonist. If we went down that road,
mm-hmm.
they feel like they go together. I see her as a newly minted vet
mm-hmm.
who specializes in
Small animals.
Yeah,
first-sized dogs.
And gerbils, right.
And gerbils and ferrets.
Did you say small animals?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Then if for amateur sleuth, she needs a closed circle of suspects, so she's going to be a member of or associated with a group of dog walkers, or people who walk their dogs every day and up in a dog park.
That's exactly right. Now, what Frankie just brought up was a really important element of the amateur sleuth genre. An amateur sleuth isn't someone who is in law enforcement who would have a right necessarily of investigating the crime. But amateur sleuth is someone who is somehow invested in the crime, whether they're being framed or they see something happen, they know something. But it gives them, they must have some kind of legitimate reason for the reader to believe that this is the right person to do this type of investigation. Would I be summarizing
and have
that?
Yep. Inside information that the police may not have access to.
Exactly.
Be able to talk to people in the group.
That's true for all of us, that the whoever is solving the crime has to have a reason more than it's their job, right?
Mm-hmm.
For your cop, there has to be something.
It usually starts as his job.
But then.
But if you know, but the kind of cops we write are the kind of cops you want to read who get very attached to the crime and want to get either justice for victims or have to overlook the awfulness of the victim because they believe in justice. So it's a belief system in a way. Mm-hmm. It's personal. We're looking for courage. We're looking for skill.
And the amateur sleuth may try to clear someone who he or she doesn't believe is guilty of the crime.
Or also because they're, like her job at the vet hospital is threatened,
right?
Because she herself has been accused. So she can try to clear herself or she can try to clear someone that she knows.
Right. Do we need a couple? So right now we have a protagonist. Do we have a victim name up here or do we need a few more names?
Oh, I think we need more names.
More names.
I think we need more names, but
more names.
Also, I think we need some
and
motives.
Motives and weapons. What's the name is?
Oh, I don't have my glasses on. Viola Heathcote, it looks like.
Darla.
Oh, it's that
Heathcote. Yeah. Sure.
This is this is for what? This is for
this. Is just another name to add. Is she going to be a victim?
Darla
feels more 1954 to me than Emily does. Like, the name.
Matilda works for that, too.
Yeah. Matilda also fits.
Yeah. Ambrose does, too.
Ambrose as well.
Yeah.
Emily's a little out of place, but maybe
she sounds like a troublemaker.
Ahead of her time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so Emily would be like 1900, even.
It would be, like Edith, for example.
Your book, right.
My name.
Okay, so now we need some weapons, and we're going to get into motives. But what's been really interesting about this conversation, too, is now you can see how one element is beginning to turn and shape our ideas a little bit. So we have a setting. Sounds like we're going more down the amateur sleuth trail with this story.
But Maddie can be the cop.
Yes,
too.
Absolutely.
We have both.
Absolutely.
Right. Do we want an occupation for Darla and Ambrose?
I think we do. Mm. I think we do.
And what is Ambrose again? He's the...
We don't know yet.
No.
Oh, he's in there, though.
We gotta kill somebody.
Yeah, he could
come
be...
on, I'm rooting for you.
He could be the dead guy.
He could be a dog groomer.
I think here's a professional dog wagger.
Walker.
Oh, that's amazing.
It looks like Wagger on the top.
It's two G's, but we'll say Walker.
It goes, okay.
So we kind of already have that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, but so Lloyd's Ambrose good. Is our professional dog walker. Okay. So of course.
Okay.
That's our.
We've got a couple doctors, a couple lawyers. We've got a realtor, another doctor.
Everybody hates lawyers.
Yeah. Mm.
Yes, they do.
So Darla could be the lawyer. Yeah.
Well, wait, what goes
former
with...
lawyer.
With?
I know. And I'm speaking from experience on that lawyer thing.
So Darla could be the lawyer or a political strategist.
That's interesting.
She doesn't go with an animal hospital.
Cat groomer.
No, cat groomer.
Yeah, that fits.
Cat she
groomer.
Could be the cat groomer.
Yeah. Dogs and cats.
Okay.
Natural tension.
Or... We could really throw a twist into 1954 and have her be the only female construction worker in the state.
Is that what that says?
Construction worker.
Wow.
Oh, no. Right? Yeah. So early feminist?
So it's an animal hospital in 1954 Richmond.
Right. Oh, all right.
Okay, so that puts Emily definitely ahead of her time. Mm-hmm. And then we had a construction, that Darla is a construction worker?
No.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Okay. Tell me, folks.
Maybe.
Hairdresser.
Oh, I think Darla is a hairdresser because she could be a hairdresser turned poodle groomer. She could be the person who puts the little mustache on the male poodle so people won't say, isn't she cute?
Yeah.
You
know?
Hairdresser slash groomer.
So author is on this list, and you see that a lot in mystery books. There's, for one thing, we know it. And another thing, authors are frequently writing about stuff people don't want them to be writing about. So they show up a lot in all kinds of mysteries.
She could be an author at, you know, on the side, the hairdresser.
Yeah.
Darla could be writing a book.
She's writing,
She's either writing memoirs of a hairdresser or she's writing dog grooming for hairdressers. Mm-hmm. An alternate career.
Oh, but I'm thinking... She might be because people talk when they're getting their hair done. So she's on the inside of a lot of community secrets.
Right, that's important.
With this. Yeah. So now that kind of sets up a motivation, but we don't have motives yet.
No.
But
I like if Darla and Emily if Emily's the lead in the book and Darla is her sidekick.
Yep, she's her best friend.
If she's grooming these dogs, she's going to be observing things. And then running them by Emily, who is a bigger cheese in the...
All right, we need a victim.
You know, it's the 1950s. I keep thinking about, you know, the housewives of the 1950s. Maybe someone's writing a book about the real-life housewives of the 1950s and how discontented they are. And you know, maybe there's a guy out there someplace that one of them might have been involved with. We're getting into that period of the... Housewife, cocktails, hairdressers,
repressed
dog walkers.
The Stepford Wives, right. I don't know. Stepford Wives would be more in my suspense-y area. Yeah. And it could work.
Yeah.
I mean, people are talking to each other. This is one of the secrets someone has. They're talking to each other as they're walking these dogs and sitting in the beauty shop about whatever's going on.
Right.
She can be going to Darla, and she can have a dog that goes to Emily. And
Ambrose.
Yeah.
So we don't have a victim yet, is what we
that's don't exactly. That's exactly right. We need a victim. So is a victim. Could Ambrose be that victim?
Yes, we should off Ambrose.
Sorry, guys.
She sounds like a victim.
This is turning into a very female-centric book.
We are sisters in crime, after all. Right. So Ambrose is our victim. Okay, so now we have setting, we have character names, we have some occupations, and our motives are.
Okay. Yes, I'm down here with motives. And here's one that really works. Revenge for his or her cat's death.
Woo!
For a thriller, this would be pretty thin. But...
Hey,
unless it was award-winning, prize-winning animals, because they could go
it's
for
possible,
tens of thousands of dollars.
Yep, could be if there's money
maybe
involved.
Maybe Ambrose
expensive
is a cat
breed.
We also have jealousy, stealing books or manuscripts, which if we have an author in there could work.
Well,
I really like this one, which is just entropy.
That's the process of writing. Sadly.
Okay. So jealousy.
Jealousy's good. Avocado cravings. You got an avocado madman on the loose.
Oh, well, that's easy because somebody is driving madly and too fast to the grocery store because they've got to have an avocado, and they run down so-and-so's precious
cat or self.
Which drives them to revenge, right.
All right, so if Ambrose is the victim, the motivation kind of starts with him. What did he potentially do to get himself killed.
All right, and then I do, at this point, though, I would also like to know what our weapon is.
Okay, well, I've got some choices here for
okay.
you. And I will start off by saying that a vast majority of you chose poison.
Yes.
A great many of you chose poison, I should say. But if we're looking at an animal hospital, we have some very interesting choices.
We
along
do have
with
some
poison,
great choices.
We
yes.
have a boa constrictor.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I like.
A big one. Got to be a really
yeah.
big one.
We have administering the wrong dose or wrong drug or dose of medication.
Yeah.
Poison.
All right.
Good for a hospital.
That's a more specific form of
poison.
So the
poison. Elephant dose got given to the cat or
right,
to Ambrose.
Right.
Or
right. And then we have a wood chipper.
Ooh. Oh, I hope that happens after they're dead.
What's that movie?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Very famous case,
Fargo.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is based on a true case, Hella Crafts.
That's right. The body was frozen, thrown into a wood chipper. All of the evidence got...
It was Fargo-ized.
Right. It was Fargo-ized. That's exactly
But that's
right.
not the weapon.
That's not the weapon.
No, that's
no,
how
that's,
you get
that's
rid of
the cover
evidence when mm-hmm. you're done.
Well,
that's
if the person were alive, but we don't even want to speculate.
No, no, let's not do that.
Okay, well, here's a good one, which, you know, goes very well with an animal hospital, but it could go anywhere, and that is a length of rubber tubing.
Mm, also good.
Oh, yeah.
That's strangulation by rubber tubing.
Ooh, right.
That's
okay.
really good for an amateur.
Do we know who the villain is yet? Because I always feel like different villains have to kind of match the
Yeah,
weapon.
we have the real investigator, Maddie, who has something to prove. So Maddie, who has something to prove, Officer Maddie has something to prove, and so she immediately goes after the wrong person.
Yeah, but who's the villain?
But who's the villain?
We
guys?
Might need more names
we need
for
a
that.
Name.
Yeah, you can't have a weapon without a villain.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I need to know who's
okay.
got that rubber tubing
Does Frankie, do you have character names?
Yes, you do.
Let's get another
couple in there.
Let's look for a villain.
Pull out a handful.
Okay. just says Jess.
Oh, well, that is
going.
A villain.
Yeah.
That's a villain. Be a different kind of book than any of us write.
Children's book. Jeff the Janitor.
All right. So we have...
okay. Margaret or Margo James.
Woman, yeah.
Doesn't work for you?
Yeah, that's a good 1954 name.
Margo. Margo, yeah.
Margo is sort of timeless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does it have an O or an O-T?
OT.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Can we back up a second? Because I feel like we need to know who the villain is before we know who the villain is, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like I want to know something about the character, and then we could look at the names and see. Because we've got so much set up mm-hmm. that just plucking a character name out of the air doesn't work. And that's true when you're writing. Mm-hmm. The deeper you get into a book, the more you have to know about the character you're about to put on the page. As opposed to at the beginning, where you can more.
Sure. We can also just choose three names and then look at them and see what speaks to
that's
us.
True.
Which I sometimes use the phone book.
Oh, gosh.
Okay,
I'll say
so
I need an ethnic
Keep going.
Name.
All right.
You know,
Margo James. A lot of first names only here.
Well, we can add a last name.
It's always important to have both. Let's see. This looks like Mortimer Platt.
Mortimer Platt?
Platt, P-L-A-T-T.
P-L-A-T-T.
I like it.
That's good.
Okay. So phone books we use for character names.
Cemeteries.
Cemeteries.
For historical.
Oh, that's right, for
historical
that
names,
would be a good
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Do we have a sense of what direction we want to go with our victim name?
With our villain.
Yeah.
There's Charlotte White.
To me, it goes back to the motive.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a beef eater.
And okay, and we're going to stick with Charlotte White, and the last one was beef eater. We're going to keep those two in abeyance. So why are you saying that we need a motive before we can really choose out that victim?
Well,
I mean, sorry, that villain's
ideally,
name?
Ideally, you're victim has, there's got to be multiple motives, right? Because if you're going to have multiple suspects, otherwise it's really boring. Mm-hmm. So the victim has to be somebody who either by their lifestyle or their personality or whatever has done enough things that people would want to kill them, unless it's something like a serial killer where it's you just randomly met the person. But in this kind of setting, you want somebody where multiple people are going to have motive to kill them. Otherwise, what is the story? So mm-hmm. one of them is the true motive that it ended up being the reason that he got killed. But the others, I mean, the villain could be wrong and mistaken, like, ooh, Ambrose didn't really run over the cat or whatever. It was really somebody else. But whatever the motive is, there has to be layers of them. So
I would agree. And that also, that I agree, that makes for much more interesting, you know, unfolding with red herrings, too. Frankie?
There is, on the flip side, there's a book that Nellie was so nice. I mean, for amateur sleuths, the villain, the victim could be someone no one would want to kill, that everyone seems to really like a lot.
Okay. Well, and then there are the books where the victim wasn't the intended victim. That's, you know, the victim was standing next to the person who was intended, or it was very dark, couldn't see who it
was.
Which
could be the case if the victim seems really nice in that case.
A twin sister, we don't want to do that.
We don't have to do the twin thing. But, you know, but a lot of times,
no twins.
It all comes down to secrets.
Yeah.
You know, in these books, so that you you have the person who appears to be so nice and everybody loves them, but they actually aren't as nice as they seem, mm-hmm. and in their behaviors that are not sort of public behaviors, they've done bad things, evil things, diabolical things, or cruel things to more vulnerable people, and those often to invisible people, mm-hmm. so that they still maintain their prestige or their image in the community, but they actually are bad people. And part of my character's job, a cop's job, would be to sort of dig into that. What is the person really like? And that's what we call in the criminal world victimology. Mm-hmm. You want to know the victim's deep story. And victims have no secrets. Once you've been the victim of a crime, everything about your life becomes open to inspection.
Well, then that's actually interesting, because initially we said that Darla was going to be the sidekick and the hairdresser, but being the hairdresser, she's privy to a lot of these secrets.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So but initially we said, it sounds like now we have the two victims. We have Ambrose first, and then we have Darla maybe as a secondary victim for that cover-up.
Well, that would be good, because
so that would really invest Emily into this. If they were friends and et cetera,
oh,
that would
very
really
much
invest
so
that.
You okay?
Yep. Once her friend got killed.
Yeah.
So you can see when you're writing a mystery too, we pretty much stay to three acts, with major game changers happening around the midpoint of the second act. So if you're beginning to read a book and it's Emily and Darla working together to uncover who ran over Ambrose, and then all of a sudden Darla ends up dead, that heightens your reading experience and it adds a lot of meat to the stories and fun.
However, if you're writing a series and your readers have fallen in love with Darla, do not
kill her off.
Seriously, you think about these things. I mean, you know, it's what was it on Star Trek? They used to talk about the one character
in the red shirt,
the stranger on that. We would always end up dead. So we
could kill Mortimer Platt.
Yeah. What was that?
We could kill Mortimer Platt.
Yeah,
that's it. So now our villain, we had Charlotte White was one of the names.
Right.
Okay, so Charlotte White, and what was the other name? Something Beefeater.
Salmon Beefeater.
So I think Charlotte White is a good red herring kind of name. You know, do you have biases when you hear that name? Do you think
Charlotte
Charlotte White?
I think she
unless she's called Charlie, then she could go either way with an amateur sleuth.
So she was the goody two-shoes in high school, but then she became Charlie, and she's a cross-dresser.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
This took a turn.
Charlotte White. Okay, so she is our villain. Bad guy.
So now we can go back and talk about the weapon. Now that I know it's a woman, that makes it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So a woman killing a man, that's where it becomes a little harder with rubber tubing.
Unless
example.
She's a weightlifter.
Yeah. Oh, unless, like, yeah, I mean, if she's Charlie's taking a weightlift. Hormones or something to beef herself up because she's transitioning, maybe. But women also lean more towards poison.
Because it's cleaner. And that's part of the psychological piece that Joanna understands. Women don't usually kill violently. We're not known for stabbing, which I'm sure my husband's very glad to hear. that we like nice, clean, simple, kind of easier things. But if the victim was killed with rubber tubing, that lends credence to the Charlie Charlotte scenario. So where are we on time? Because I'm...
What do we have until...
We don't seem to have anyone in our timekeeper slot.
What is it?
40.
11:40. Okay, so we have 10 minutes to roll this up, and then we're going to open up 10 minutes to questions. So we have now, we have our setting, 1954 Richmond, Virginia. It's a vet hospital. We've got Emily. We've got our sidekick, who's going to be killed off in the middle. We have Charlotte Charlie. We have Ambrose, who's our first victim, and we have Maddie. Okay, folks, bring us into the first chapter. And tell us what your points are, and we'll go down by, just bring us into your first chapter first.
If I were writing it, and I'm not sure I would write this book, but I would open it on a normal day in the veterinary hospital where they have to euthanize some of the animals, and we get to see how the characters who are working there respond to what is really just an everyday thing at an animal hospital in 1954.
And if I were writing this, of course, we've now been put in 1954, and I want to have a female cop, and there weren't any, or there were hardly any. So Maddie is going to be so constrained by absolutely everything in her life, and she's probably driving home from another confrontation with another jerk who thinks that women don't belong in the police department when she finds Ambrose's body and probably a small dog alongside it lying at the side of the road and stops and has to run in her mind, I've got to do this right, I've got to do this right, what am I seeing? And she's taking notes and she's calling it in. She probably has to find a phone booth at that point. Maybe they still had those things in there. Could they call up from the...
Oh, they could call up.
They call up from the car. So she's calling up from the car, and she's saying, I've got this. And she's trying to get it so right.
This is good.
Because... Yeah. No, because that's her life depends on it.
And actually what you just did too is that conflict. You know, what drives our story so much is the conflict. And it's not just pitting person against person. In this case, it's Maddie against her career, her job, her reputation, her perception.
The chief.
So that sets up conflict. Is there another first chapter scene, Joanna?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't write this either. But from like a thriller psychological point of view, you might start with the villain's point of view. And you don't know necessarily who it is. It might be first person or close third. You don't know. But talking about their motivation, or somebody's got to die, but you don't know who it is. Like, you get this sense that something bad is going to happen, and this person has it in for somebody else for some reason that they are indicating. And that's where you get sort of the psychological... peek into their motivation, but also you get suspense because you at that point don't know who the victim's going to be, or why necessarily.
Right.
I would write this as an amateur sleuth, obviously.
Yes.
So Emily, the vet, is the protagonist. She's having a really bad day. Things are going bad. Dalla has a hair salon next door. Emily is supposed to go in for an appointment. She goes in. She's really out of it. Dalla's trying to talk to her about something that's bothering her. Emily's not listening. Dalla later, she's the sidekick, so I wouldn't kill her off normally because this is the first in a series. But assuming that she is going to be killed off, she's one of the victims, right?
Yeah, she can be poisoned and survive, or she can be survive a terrible attack.
So Emily's not listening. Dalla turns up dead. Later, Emily feels really guilty. Emily has enough problems because the cat has also died that she's responsible for, and she doesn't know what killed a cat. So a lot of things are going wrong, and she also feels guilty.
You're gonna kill a cat, Nicosi?
Well, not something you want to do in an amateur sleuth book. You don't want to kill the cat.
Never.
Or the dog. Or
really in any
book. No harm, no harm animals.
Or children. Or children.
Survive, but if the cat dies, then she really has to solve this.
Right. And I would open a little more like Hallie, because it's got to be cozy. It can't be too dark, the books I write. And so we do open at the vet, and it's kind of a normal day, but Ambrose was supposed to show up to do the grooming, and he doesn't show up. And we see how they react, and we also see a piece of tubing in the office. We need to be able to see that tubing. And they're talking a little bit about Ambrose, and sort of so we set up sort of what they do know about him, and then we find out more after he's the victim.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, right now this is setting up for the amateur sleuth. I agree. We've got the protagonist who's invested somehow to try to find the answer to this. What is going to set this book apart from all the other amateur sleuth books out there? What's going to be that thing?
Look at it. Sorry.
Yeah.
With the amateur sleuth book, I really got to have a sense of time and place. So Richmond, Virginia, yeah. 1954, I would invest a lot in that setting because the setting is almost a character in these books.
Okay. So
And we'd look at the language, right? Historical, right. What words didn't they use? What technology didn't they have?
Like they never used the word hack. For
no, yeah.
They wouldn't be faxing.
But like, and right. What did the police cars look like inside?
Right.
All of those historical details, because some of us were alive then, but didn't know that much at that time.
Okay, so now we've done our first chapter. Now let's fast forward to our last chapter. Sum it up. What has happened? Who is doing the summation? Tell us, that was the revenge for killing my pets, or jealousy because Darla over. Tell me about that last chapter. Sum it all up for us.
Well, in traditional amateur sleuth, which is Cozy's and historicals, the kind of historicals I write, it's in one point of view. So it's going to be the protagonist summing it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start there.
Okay. I mean the very last chapter.
Very last.
Yeah. Because the way these books work is there's a before the last chapter and there's a last chapter.
Right.
And before the last chapter is always a head-to-head conflict between the bad guy and the good guy. And even in my books, there could be violence then, certainly shouting, and we find out everything. And then there's the last scene in which everything is mopped up. Mm-hmm. So which one do you mean?
Let's go to second to last.
Second to last.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's the revelation? What's the shoe drop?
So we have the Charlotte Charlie, we have Ambrose, that's what I'm asking you guys. What has been that thing? What do we have, the revenge, the jealousy?
No idea.
Okay, I've got one. So I write cops, so it's gonna be a beautiful race against time chapter.
Great.
In which Maddie realizes that the thing that the tools through which various people manipulate. Maybe I should have Darla. Darla or Emily is going to be seriously at risk. Charlotte has killed once. She will kill again to protect that secret.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that Charlotte is ruthless, and she is trying to figure out where Charlotte is with, I think, Emily, the vet. She's at the veterinary clinic. There's all kinds of things available
after
that Charlotte
hours.
Can use it's after hours.
10 p.m.
Charlotte has come on the pretext of my dog is very sick. Emily has stayed to take care of the dog. Maddie is trying to get there. There are no cell phones. She can't call up and say, don't let her in. She's racing against time. There's a rainstorm. There's a tree down across the road. There have to be like these obstacles to be overcome in order to get there, hopefully in time to save Emily from Charlotte now that she finally knows that Charlotte is the bad guy.
Oh, wow. And that's why you do what you do. Holy mackerel. Okay, last thing we need. We need a title.
Oh, a title.
Mm. Oh.
We need a title.
Doggone.
Doggone. We'll talk about title conventions very quickly. Cozy often has a play on words.
A pun in the title.
That's right. Hallies are, they're almost like phrases, normal phrases that you turn on their heads.
Careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. That's exactly right. And you bring us into time and place with your titles.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then we have very clipped titles, No Mercy, Vanishing Act Game, sorry.
Yeah. Thing, yep. Yeah.
So, and then that lends itself to the thriller aspect where you question, what do you mean with that? So what's our...
And the police titles.
Well, mine all have loveless sort of religious sort of thing, and grant you peace, playing God, the angel...
Right.
You know, things like that.
So. Okay. So we're going to be amateur, so that'll bring us into time and place. So we have doggone is one idea. What's another? What are we naming this?
Doggone is, because the amateur sleuths don't always have to be in cozies.
Right.
So that's a cozy kind of title.
It is. Mm-hmm. And this isn't that cozy.
Yeah.
Book.
Right. Yeah. This is an edgier amateur sleuth.
Okay. I don't know. So we'll leave that to our publishing house to decide who's going to...
As we do.
Yes.
As we do. I know. We think we have the greatest title, and then we have to rename it.
Yeah.
It can be... I don't know what we could name it.
One of the things about the amateur sleuth here, we've got a female detective, but if this were going to be a series, I might very well have a male homicide detective and find a way to bring them together again and again.
Romance.
Probably want a romantic plot or arc for the characters.
Yeah, so like on
and
Dasher.
And give her the connection to the police department that she clearly needs. If we're going to have a vet falling over bodies over and over again, she needs some connection. Maybe she's going to be a consultant to the police department.
All right.
Taking
care
of bloodhounds or something.
So I'm seeing something with Dasher in the title.
And you can have Dasher's Dilemma. You can have Dasher and Death.
There you go. There you go.
Or Dash to Death, you know.
Dash to Death. That could be
it. She's not going to be encountering bodies over and over in this closed circle, but... If she becomes a consultant, then she has a way of getting to those bodies. Mm-hmm.
So. Right. Anyway, let's hit round of applause for Doggone. And then how about Dash to Death? And now you have just gotten a small glimpse behind the curtain of our amazing creative process. But I think we have about 10 minutes or so. So does anyone have any questions for us?
Right.
What do you use an ethnic name for, and what do you want the ethnic name to convey?
I think we could all speak to that. I think that sometimes you use an ethnic name to create diversity among your characters because of the problem of them otherwise all being Anglo. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it reflects the community.
Right. Well, and it reflects the character, and it's also helpful to the reader to keep the character names straight.
Oh, yeah.
If all of them have Irish, Scottish names, I have a terrible time sorting them. But if we have a couple of names in there that are clearly not like that, it helps. And you're always trying to help your reader. You never give multiple characters with the first initial the same.
So
we're always thinking about that, of making it.
We have a good list there. We have E, a D, an M, an A, and a C.
That's exactly right. So you wouldn't have Emily and her sidekick, Ellen, because you'd get confused with that.
Completely.
Right.
Or even Ed. I mean, it's amazing how people can conflate.
Right. Yeah. Right. Question in the back? Is that, I didn't catch the last piece.
Does it make your life easier or harder?
Oh, I think...
Wait, repeat the...
Yeah. Does it make life, so to repeat, when we are writing to genre, and does that make it easier or harder when we're constructing our stories?
Yeah.
Right. Does it make it harder? I think it does.
I think, though, it's more about your brand. I mean, I think each of us have created for ourselves a kind of brand. And, I mean, I always say my books are creepy but not icky. So you can read it and know that there won't be a baby killed or a graphic rape on the page.
Yeah.
And so that's something I've chosen. Yeah, sometimes it boxes me in writing, and I know my readers expect it. But it's not because of the genre. It's because of the way my books are over the course mm-hmm. of
the stories that you tell.
The stories I tell, mm-hmm.
And in the cozy, one of the rules is I'm not going to write any obscenities in my manuscript. So, you know, if you were a vet walking along and you found a body, would you say, oh, dang it, there's a body?
No.
Might use something. Well, my mother would have said, dang it. But it actually makes me more creative. I write, well, you know, she let out a string of expletives worthy of a seaman or, whatever. That would have shocked her mother, exactly. So I have to find creative ways to write around that.
Well, I'm writing amateur sleuth, but I'm not cozy, and so I'm dealing with social issues. I've got an interracial couple. I've got all of these things that happen in the character's arc that if people are assuming cozy, they might be surprised that I'm dealing with social issues.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Although cozies can deal with social issues, too.
Yes.
Go ahead. Question?
The suspect.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. That would be like a red herring.
As multiple people as possible.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That keeps the readers guessing. And a lot of times it keeps the authors guessing too, because we don't know what the heck's going on until we write it a lot of times. So.
Yeah, and that's just, sometimes we have another bag for suspects.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you're saying. If you don't have them, it's too easy.
Yeah.
And it's no fun in being able to guess it too early.
All right. Yeah, so we have just a few minutes left. Just another question or two?
Oh, you mean I don't have to write it?
Well, you know what, and you have to go back to, what someone said about, Shakespeare. There's all the stories have already been written, but it's what these authors do, this really amazing, incredibly talented group of women do, to make it their own special sauce. And that's why, individual readers, devour one book after another of their favorite author. Because, truthfully, when it comes to killing for revenge, accidental death, the stupid villain, the incredible, brilliant villain. It really has been done. Look at how many books come out every single year. But what each of these authors do in such an incredible way is to bring you into their world and then to hypnotize you into their story so that you keep on turning those pages. And I really give them a tremendous amount of credit for the talent, creativity, and the success that you all have brought to bear with us. So thank you, Sisters in Crime, New England authors.
Thank you all.
Look us up on the internet. Please join. We love avid readers. So for Frankie, we have books out there. Our books are out there. We'll sign them for you. Death's Favorite Child, Hallie. Careful What You Wish For, Kate. A Child Shall Lead Them, Edith as Maddie Day, Strangled Eggs and Ham, Joanna No Mercy, and myself, The Troubles. And thank you so much, everybody.